Here with me I have Laurent Javadon, who is with the delegation of the European Commission to the United States. And here at this Farm Foundation Transition to a Bioeconomy Conference, you were talking about the impacts of EU mandates for renewable energy, which I think would be something very interesting to people here in the United States. So if you could give me a few of the salient points that you made about this particular issue.
Good afternoon, Chuck. Thank you very much for the question. The key points that I made this afternoon are the following. We in Europe don't have an absolute value for our mandate. We don't speak into billions of gallons. We speak into a percentage of the energy that will go to transport in Europe by 2020. And we don't only look at biofuels, but we look at all sorts of renewable energy sources that could go to transportation. So that includes not only biofuels, but also potentially renewable electricity. That's one. Then this said, it's obvious that biofuels will be part of the mix, although not the full 10%. And for those biofuels that will go into the European mandate, we need to make sure that they are produced in a sustainable way in order for the mandate to be politically palatable for Europeans. One of the major criteria has to do with the greenhouse gas savings that come from the biofuels. We expect biofuels to deliver on at least 35% savings for greenhouse gas emissions compared to fossil fuels. And this bar will raise over time, notably in 2017. This is not the sustainability criteria are not a trade barrier because they don't decide who is in and who is out of the European market. Rather, they are sort of eligibility criteria to determine what type of biofuels will count against the European mandate. And only these ones will count against the mandate, and only this one will be eligible for policy support.
And now, this is a policy that you have in effect now, right?
Actually, it's not yet in place. It's still a work in progress. A very critical step has been achieved last December, where the two decision-making bodies of the EU agreed together on a final text. But this text still has to be published to the official journal, and that's the easy part. And then there are still a window of maximum 18 months for each of the 27 countries of the EU to put this in place. So we are looking at a horizon of second semester 2010.
Well, when you look at that, I'm sure a lot of analysis is being done. Talking about impacts, I mean, how do you think this would impact, say, your average citizen of the EU then?
In terms of impact, we think that the mandate is ambitious. We don't pick the winners, so we don't pick electricity or biofuels, any type of things of that sort. But because the overall target is ambitious, obviously trade will be part of the equation. And it's not the intention of European countries to produce everything at home, to grow all the feedstock at home. So there will be opportunities for our trade partners, Brazil and others, to actually supply part of this mandate to Europe. For the European citizen, obviously, having an economy and a transport system that is built for a significant share on renewable energy, that's the guarantee of maintaining our standards of living, our way of life over the long term.
Well, when it comes to, because biofuels will play a key role in that, and even into the foreseeable future, that will come from feedstocks of some kind, whether that's conventional or new cellulosic types. Do you see biotech having a role to play in that, or how do you see?
biotech is actually a way of producing the feedstock. We de facto we are using feedstock for other purposes, like livestock. Europe has a big livestock sector in Europe, so it would be misleading to think of Europe as a GMO-free garden or an organic garden of some sort. Europe already imports GMOs for the livestock sector, and biofuels just generate a new demand for livestock, and that will be for feedstock, and that will be reflected in the price of the commodities, and price will trigger innovation if prices are high enough. So there's no specific linkage to make. It's just the overall ag economy that will comment what changes to happen.
Well, I think it's nice to see a conference like this where we can get a perspective from representatives from other countries here in the United States. I'm assuming that, of course, what we're doing here in the United States is something that you've looked at in the European Union. I mean, how do you feel about not just the way we're going about it, which is different, like you said, where we're pointing to a specific measurable gallonage of liquid fuel here, but do you think collaboration is going to lead to maybe some better cooperation internationally when it comes to looking at how we're going to fulfill our energy needs?
I could start with the good news that there is already some collaboration in some aspects. One has to do with the standards for biofuels, making sure that biofuels can become a globally traded commodity. And that means that standardizing bodies in Europe, US, Brazil are working together to make sure that there's no unintended barriers to a global trade for biofuels. So this is already a good cooperation. Other type of cooperation has to do with the carbon life cycle analysis. Europeans probably made the first move in their directive in proposing a methodology on how they will eventually calculate whether a biofuel meets or doesn't meet the 35% greenhouse gas savings. But the same debate is happening in the US, so there's a lot of exchanges between academics and administration on how exactly is the best way to do this carbon scoring. Then when it comes to mandates, there's no international body where everyone would gather at this point in time, but who knows what the future can bring.
Well, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to speak with me here at this Farm Foundation Transition to a Bioeconomy Conference. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.